You know where we stopped?
Yes, 548.
Hmm?
It's a four-way stimulation game in the middle of this. Once you're down.
Yes. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We are in book 7, the book of yoga, and we're coming towards the end of canto 6, nirvana and the all-negating absolute. We reached page 548. You think we went further?
Which line?
548, yes. And it's line, we will start at line 591, which reads, a formless liberation came on her. In response to a command from above, telling her that in order to fulfill her mission, the reason why she has come on earth, she will have to be able to widen her consciousness so much that it can contain the whole universe inside it. So that if the world is destroyed, it will just be a small passing incident in the vastness of her consciousness. She must attain this infinite, eternal wideness. And the voice tells her how to do that. That she has to completely silence her mind, separate herself, detach herself from all the appearances of the world. And she starts to do that. She sits and looks into herself, and she follows several steps. The first step is simply observing all the movements of the inner being. Whatever comes up, she notices it, but doesn't respond or react to it. She just lets it be. Observation. But then the second step is discriminating, being able to identify the origin of the different movements. And she sees that thoughts are coming down, in, up from the body, from many, many different sources, thoughts are coming. And then she realizes that if she takes her station high enough in her being, above the head here, that she can impose her will for silence on the whole being. And she starts to do that. And this again takes several stages. But now, at last, she has reached a state where eternity and infinity seemed but words vainly affixed by mind's incompetence to its stupendous lone reality. She becomes aware of a vast reality which can't be described or expressed in any way, but she experiences it. And the experience is summed up in lines 587 to 89. If all existence could renounce to be, and being take refuge in non-being's arms, and non-being could strike out its ciphered round some luster of that reality might appear. It's a very paradoxical explanation, description to make us stretch our minds and get some sense of what that lone reality is. So that's where we stopped last week. Stefania, would you start?
Yes. A formless liberation came on her. Once separate, alive in brain and flesh, she had risen up from body, mind, and life. She was no more a person in the world. She had escaped into infinity. What once had been herself had disappeared. There was no frame of things, no figure of soul. A refugee from the domain of sense, evading the necessity of thought. delivered from knowledge and from ignorance, and rescued from the true and the untrue. She shared the superconscious high retreat, beyond the self-born world, the new, the first bare solid ground of consciousness. Beings were not there, existent and no place. There was no temptation of joy, of the joy to be. Unutterably effaced, no one and now, a vanishing vestige like a violet trace, a faint record merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable.
Thank you. What Savitri has been attempting is to go beyond the identification with an individual self and the perception that an individual being like each of us has of the world and the universe around us. So by this total silencing of the whole being, in which she becomes a silent spirit pervading silent space, she becomes aware that there's some unknowable vast reality beyond everything that we perceive. And this brings her this formless liberation. She becomes free of the sense of form. She realizes that what she has been, it's as if she's been buried alive. A sepulchre is a grave. One sepulchred alive in brain and flesh. Now she's risen up from the body, from the mind, from the life. So she knows that she exists, she has a sense of herself, but it's no longer as a person in a world. She's escaped into infinity. What once had been herself, this Savitri, had disappeared. Frame, there's no frame of things. There's even no figure of soul. We might have a sense of our soul and where it is in us, a little shape, a presence. But even that has dissolved. She's a refugee from the domain of sense. All of us live in the domain of sense. Our sense of our form and our existence, our relation with the world around, it's all ruled by the senses. And she's escaped, she's evaded the necessity of thought. So she's delivered from knowledge and from ignorance, and she's rescued from something that's very important to us human beings, the sense of what is true and what is not true. It's a very important stage in our evolution. But now she's gone beyond this distinction. She's come to where she can share the superconscious high retreat, what is above our consciousness. Not only above our normal consciousness, but beyond all the higher levels of consciousness, in the transcendent, the superconscious, high retreat. It has its living there, withdrawn beyond the self-born word, the word of creation that has given rise to the whole manifestation. Beyond that. Beyond even the idea of that. the conception which preceded the word and the creation. She's there on the first bare, solid ground of consciousness, a kind of state of pure existence, as beings were not there. Even existence had no place. And there was no temptation, no call of the joy to exist. The kind of ultimate description that the great sages have been able to give of the highest that they could conceive of is Sat-Chit-Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, inseparable. But she has gone even beyond this, and she's lost almost all sense of her own existence. She feels unutterably effaced. She's not there. She's no one. She's nothing. Only she feels like something that's left over, that's dissolving, a vanishing vestige, like a violet trace. Mother has made a beautiful painting of this, a neutral ground and a single faint violet line. That's how Savitri feels herself now. A vanishing vestige, like a violet trace, the trace of something that's no longer there. A faint record, merely, of a self now past. That self that she was has faded away. She's become simply a point. A point has no dimensions. It is just a this is a point of awareness, perhaps, in the unknowable reality. But she has not disappeared completely. Lela, would you read?
Only some last moments now remain. Annihilation's base.
Indefinable.
A memory of being still locked there, and kept her separate from nothingness. She wasn't that, but still became not that. This shadow of herself so close to not could be again self's point that we need to live. Return out of the inconceivable and be what some mysterious vast might choose.
Shall we pause there? Only some last annulment. An annulment is when you become nothing. That still remained. That would mean as another vague, indefinable step into annihilation, that she would cease to exist altogether. But that hasn't happened. A memory of being, a memory of existing, still was there. And that keeps her separate from that nothingness all around her. She was in that reality, which indefinable reality, but she has not melted into it completely. She has not become that. So this vanishing vestige, this violet trace, this shadow of herself, which is so close to being nothing, could be a point d'appui. It means a starting point, I think. No? Something that you can you can lean on and make a fresh start. No? A supporting point for self to live, to exist again. So then, with that, using that point d'appui, this shadow of herself, she could return out of that inconceivable state that she's in, and she might become whatever that mysterious vast might choose. She will not choose. She has no will of her own anymore. No? But there's something there which might become something else.
But also this point of appui, if she has not that, she cannot do what she has to do for Satyavani. No? I mean, I think that the thing that's
yeah, so
there.
let's see what comes next. Tuan, you would read? Even as the unknowable decreed.
Even as the unknowable decreed, she might be not a new become the all. Or if the omnipotent nihil took a shape, emerge as someone and redeem the world. Even she might learn what the mystic Sifra held. This seeming exit or closed end of all could be a blind, tenebrous passage screened from sight. Her state, the eclipsing shell of a darkened sun on its secret way to the ineffable. Even now, her splendid being might flame back out of the silence and the nullity, the gleaming portion of the all of some all-affirming absolute, the shining mirror of the eternal truth, to show to the one and all its manifest face, to the souls of men their deep identity. Or she might wake into God's quiet, beyond the cosmic day and cosmic night, and rest at peace in his white eternity. But this what are covered in the mystic, faithless blade. In infinite nothingness was the ultimate sign, or else the real was the unknowable, a lonely, absolute, negated home. It effaced the ignorant world from its solitude and drowned the soul in its everlasting peace.
Thank you. Since she hasn't disappeared completely, there are various possibilities. And it will depend on the decree of the unknowable. She might become nothing. Or she might come back and be identified with the entire manifestation. New become the all, the whole. Or if that all-powerful nothingness took on a shape, she might emerge again as someone, and she might be able to save the world. There's even the possibility that she might learn what is within this unknowable reality, what the mystic cipher held. Is it hiding something? What is it holding within it? This seems like an exit from existence. If she merges into this, if she becomes nothingness, it seems like an exit or a closed end, blank wall from which you can't pass beyond. But it might not be that. It could be a blind passage, a passage you can't see where it's leading to. Passage full of shadows, darkness. Even the passage itself is invisible, screened from sight. And he gives this image that perhaps what she is now It might be the experience of a sun that's burnt out and it is collapsing, the eclipsing shell of a darkened sun. Nowadays, scientists have a name for this. They call it a black hole, no? When a sun collapses in on itself and even no light can escape. And nobody knows what happens then, no? A state of a darkened sun on its secret way to the ineffable, to a state that cannot be expressed. But on the other hand, even now, all her splendid being, her glory and power and beauty might flame back out of the silence and the nothingness. It might show itself to be a beautiful part, a portion, a gleaming portion of the all-wonderful, a power of some all-affirming absolute, an absolute that says yes to everything, a shining mirror of the eternal truth to show to the one reality, its manifest face, its face manifested in the universe. That mirror might show to the souls of men their deep identity, the way that we are all connected on the soul level. Or none of that might happen. Instead, she might wake up in the peace, the quietude of God, beyond the cosmic day and the cosmic night. And rest, appeased, completely satisfied and at peace in some white eternity. Those possibilities are there, but they seem now to be unreal, far away, or covered up by that mystic, fathomless blank, that blankness in which she's just a violet trace. It now feels as if the ultimate sign, the ultimate indication and appearance is in infinite nothingness. And if it's not infinite nothingness, at least the reality, the ultimate reality, is unknowable. It can't be apprehended by the consciousness. The part of the title of this canto is the all-negating absolute. No? That's what she's experiencing now. Something absolutely powerful, the only real existence that says no to everything. And the power of that lonely absolute just effaced, wiped this ignorant world out of its oneness, its aloneness, and that drowns the soul in everlasting peace. This is a very, very powerful experience which has been the goal of many yogas, many spiritual disciplines all over the world through the ages. Mystics, saints, sages, they have aimed for this state of nothingness, of merging into some unknowable reality, so that the soul can rest in everlasting peace. But this is not the aim of Sri Aurobindo's yoga. And it's not the end of Savitri's yoga. We have one more canto to read, one short canto.
I have a question here. Is that from the nothingness that everlasting peace has in Sri Aurobindo and the mother, often I pray for it, no? Is the peace of the integral yoga of them has another quality, or has another, and sometimes it comes more vivid also, as this piece is here more calm. You thought about this? Or?
No, I think Sri Aurobindo is going to tell us about that in the next canto. It'd be better if we listen to it in his hid words than if I try to say something about it. If I try to say something about it, I would say that in his own yoga, this peace was the basis for his dynamic action. Yes. Yes. But this is all that we can say about it. It was hid, it was perceived, but hid itself from mind and sight. The one only real shut itself away from space. It can't be encompassed in space. It stood aloof from the idea of time. So that's why the names that have been affixed to this one reality are the unknowable, the formless, the ineffable, the incommunicable, the incommensurable. I don't think we can call it exactly God, but we could say it's the supreme reality. So that's why we can't say anything about it. And why our mind can't grasp what it is. It's unknowable, incommunicable. But she felt it, she perceived it. She could in some way be aware of that reality.
Could you speak a little louder?
6:15, line 6:15.
Right, everybody should speak loudly.
Yes, because it's not possible to follow it. Sorry.
She was in that, but is that this mysterious vast that will choose her destiny? I was just wondering if you know.
Well, in Sanskrit, that's one of the labels, no? That, tat, no? You can't say anything else about it, it's just that. This is an absolute which negates everything. So this can't really be the supreme reality. It would mean that everything else is an illusion, but it could be the origin of everything. Yes, Don.
My understanding, which is obviously not too good there is the absolute, which is being described here, and there's the absolute diversity, for the want of a better term. It's the same, but how it's the same we don't understand, but all that we are is from the absolute diversity returning to the absolute reality, is what I understand, and I would like to have that discussed.
We can say that what we experience here in the universe is the multiplicity.
Diversity.
And this extends from the infinitesimally small, the subatomic particles and all these things that we can't perceive directly, to the inconceivably vast. But in a way, we can conceive, and people have even experienced, a state which is beyond the multiplicity. First of all, there's an experience in which the multiplicity is all connected, is the one, the all. But there's then experienced or posited a state which is beyond that oneness of the multiplicity, which is a transcendent state, which is beyond manifestation and pervading, entirely pervading everything, which is perhaps the source and the end of everything. She's experiencing one aspect of that, the unknowable, always forever mysterious and inexpressible, all-negating absolute, which effaces the ignorant world from its solitude. It seems to exclude everything that we are here from its reality, from its state. And that's a very, very powerful and very liberating experience, that one is, can be free from thought and experience and individuality. But Sri Aurobindo tells us this is not the only possible experience. It's so powerful that it has been taken for thousands of years as the supreme realization. Now he's going to show us another side of it.
And that's why he uses the word drown, connotation of not uplifting the mind.
Drowning and dissolving. No? Yes.
There's a parallel in the physical world that keeps coming to me, and that has to do with when a baby is born, it comes out fresh, you know, there's a stage where it can only say no. Baby can't say yes to anything. Yet it's in this world that can't conceive intellectually or
in any other way.
It's a possibility in a birth that's not been, you know, a beautiful birth, let's say, where the child is really given. So it's almost, as to me, I see that it's, when it knows, it doesn't know. It's just there being.
Yes. So the last canto is very short. It's called The Cosmic Spirit and the Cosmic Consciousness. And before we start to study it, we'll just read it. It just has two short sections. In the little hermitage, in the forest's heart, in the sunlight and the moonlight and the dark, the daily human life went plodding on, even as before, with its small unchanging works and its spare outward body of routine and happy quiet of ascetic peace. The old beauty smiled of the terrestrial scene. She too was her old gracious self to men. The ancient mother clutched her child to her breast, pressing her close in her environing arms, as if earth ever the same could forever keep the living spirit and body in her clasp, as if death were there, as if death were not there, nor end, nor change. Accustomed only to read outward signs, none saw aught new in her. None divined her state. They saw a person where was only God's vast, a still being or a mighty nothingness. To all she was the same perfect Savitri, a greatness and a sweetness and a light poured out from her upon her little world. Life showed to all the same familiar face. Her acts followed the old unaltered round. She spoke the words that she was wont to speak and did the things that she had always done. Her eyes looked out on Earth's unchanging face. Around her soul's muteness, all moved as of old. A vacant consciousness watched from within, empty of all but bare reality. Aran, you like to read? No? Yam's going to read?
There was no will behind the word and act, no thought formed in her brain to guide the speech. An impersonal emptiness walked and spoke in her, something perhaps unfelt, unseen, unknown, guarded the body or its future work, or nature moved in her old stream of force. Perhaps she bore, made conscious in her breast, the miraculous nihil origin of her soul, and the source and sum of the vast world's events. The womb and grave of thought, a cipher of God, a zero circle of being's totality. It used her speech and acted in her acts. It was beauty in her limbs, life in her breath. The original mystery wore her human face. Thus she was lost within the separate self. Thus she was lost with her mortal ego perished in God's night. Only a body was left, the ego's shell, afloat mid drift and foam of the world sea. A sea of dream watched by emotionless sense, in a figure of unreal reality. An impersonal foresight could already see. In the unthinking knowledge of the spirit, even now it seemed nigh done. Invitable.
Inevitable.
Inevitable. The individual died. The cosmos pass. These gone, the transcendental. Transcendental grew a myth. The Holy Ghost without the Father and Son, or a sun stratum of what had once had been, being that never willed to bear a world. Restored to its original loneliness, impassive, soul, silent, intangible.
Intangible means it can't be touched. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well done. Irene, you'd like to read?
Yet all was not extinct in this deep loss. The being traveled not towards nothingness, that was somehow surpassing secrecy. And when she sat alone with Satyavan, her moveless mind was his that searched and strove in the hush of the profound and intimate night. She turned to the face of a veiled, formless truth hid in the dumb recess of the heart. Or walking
waiting
beyond the last peak climbed by thought, unseen itself, it sees the struggling world and prompt our quest, but cares not to be found. Out of that distant past came a reply. Something unknown, unreached, unscrutable, sent down the messages of its bodiless light. Cast lightning flashes of a thought, not ours, crossing the immobile silence of her mind. In its mind of irresponsible sovereignty, it saves on speech to give those flamings shape. They beat the heart of wisdom in a word and spoke immortal things through mortal lips. Or listening to the sages of the woods, in question and in answer, wrote from her, high, strange revealings impossible to men, something or someone secret and remote, took hold of her body for his mystic use. Her mouth was safe to channel ineffable truth, knowledge unthinkable found in utterance.
Thank you. Patricia.
Astonished by a new enlightenment, invaded by a streak of the absolute, they marveled at her, for she seemed to know what they had only glimpsed at times afar. These thoughts were formed not in her listening brain. Her vacant heart was like a stringless harp. Impassive, the body claimed not its own voice, but let the luminous greatness through it pass. A dual power and being's occult poles still active, nameless and invisible. Her divine emptiness was their instrument. Inconscient nature dealt with the world it had become.
It had made.
It had made. And using still the body's instruments, slipped through the conscious void she had become. Superconscient mystery, through that void, its word to touch the thoughts of men. As yet, this great impersonal speech was rare. But now the unmoving, wide spiritual space in which her mind survived tranquil and bare, admitted a traveler from the cosmic breaths. A thought came through, draped as an altered voice. It called not for the witness of the mind. It spoke not to the hushed receiving heart. It came direct to the pure perception's seat, and only center now of consciousness, if center could be, where all seemed only space. No more shut in by bodies, walls, and gates, her being, a circle without circumference, already now surpassed all cosmic bounds, and more spread into infinity. this being was its own unbounded world, a world without form or feature or circumstance. It had no ground, no wall, no roof of thought, yet saw itself and looked on all around in a silence, motionless and illimitable. There was no person there, no centered mind, no seat of feeling on which beat events or objects wrought and shaped reactions stress. There was no motion in this inner world. All was as still and even infinity. In her, the unseen, the unknown.
Helmut.
But now she sat by sleeping such as one. Awake within, and this enormous night surrounded her with an unrelated stars. A voice began to speak from her own heart that was not hers, that mastered thought and sense. As it spoke, all changed within her and with us. All was, all lived. She felt all beings one. There was no more a universe built by mind, convicted as a structure or a sign. A spirit, a being saw created things and cast itself into unnumbered forms and was what it saw and met. All now became an evidence of one stupendous truth. A truth in which negation had no place. A being and a living consciousness. A stark and absolute reality. There the unreal could not find a place. The sense of unreality was gone. There was conscious, made of the infinite. All had the substance of the ground. But this was the same in the cycle. It seemed to cast from it universe like a dream, vanishing forever into an original void. But this was no more some vague, ubiquitous torment of a cycle of vastness and unrealness. It was the same. But now no more seemed far to the living class of her recovered soul. It was herself. It was the self of all. It was the reality of existing things. It was the consciousness of all that lived and felt and saw. It was timelessness in time. It was the bliss formlessness and form. It was all love, and the one beloved is arms. It was sight and thought in one all-seeing mind. It was joy of being and the peace of God.
Thank you. What happened to Patty?
Sorry?
What happened to Patty? Oh, would you read, Patty?
She passed beyond time into eternity, slipped out of space and became the infinite. Her being rose into unreachable heights and found no end of its journey in the self. It plunged into the unfathomable deeps and found no end to the silent mystery that held held all world within one lonely breast, yet harbored all creation's multitudes. She was all vastness and one measureless point. She was a height beyond heights, a depth beyond depth. She lived in the everlasting, and was all that harbors death and bears the weaving hours. All contraries were true in one huge spirit, surpassing measure, change, and circumstance. An individual, one with cosmic self, in the heart of the transcendence miracle, and the secret of world personality, was the creator and the lord of all. Mind was a single, innumerable look upon himself and all that he became. Life was his drama, and the vast, a stage. The universe was his body, God its soul. All was one single, immense reality. All its innumerable phenomena.
Thank you. Ellen, do you like to read? Her spirit?
Her spirit saw the world.
Her spirit saw the world as living God. It saw the one and knew that all was he. She knew him as the absolute safe space, one with herself and ground of all things that here, in which the world wanders seeking for the world, guarded behind its face of ignorance. She followed him through the march of endless time. All nature's happenings were events in her. The heartbeats of the cosmos were her own. All beings sought and felt and moved in her. She inhabited the vastness of the world. Its distances were her nature's boundaries. Its closeness, her own life's intimacy. Her mind became familiar with its mind. Its body was her body's larger frame, in which she lived and knew herself in it. One,
multitudinous.
Multitudinous in its multitude. She was a single being, yet all things. The world was her spirit's wide circumference. The thoughts of others were her intimate. The feelings close to her universal heart. Their bodies, her many bodies, kin to her. She was no more herself, but all the world.
Thank you. Mila.
Out of the infinitudes, all came to her. Into the infinitudes, sentient, she spread. Infinity was her own natural home. Nowhere she dwelt. Her spirit was everywhere. The distant constellations wheeled round her. Earth saw her born. All worlds were her colonies. The greater worlds of life and mind were hers. All nature reproduced her in its lines. Its movements were large copies of her own. She was the single self of all these shells. She was in them, and they were all in her. This first was an immense identity in which lost. What seemed herself was an image of the whole. She was a subconscious life of tree and flower, the outbreak of the honeyed buds of the spring. She burned in the passion and splendors of the rose. She was the red heart of the passion flower, the dream white of the lotus in its pool. Out of subconscious life, she climbed to mine. She was caught in the passion of the world's heart. She was the Godhead hid in the heart of man. She was the climbing of the cosmos flower in her. She was its bed. She was time and the dreams of God in time. She was a space and the whiteness of his days. From this she rose there, where time and space were not. The superconscient was her native air. Infinity was her movement's natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time.
I think it would be nice to listen to the last six passages, but perhaps before we do that, I'd just summarize the movement of this canto. There are only three passages in the new canto. We can listen to the last three passages of the seed of the previous canto, and then these two. It's a whole movement, these six. But first, we've just got a few minutes. Maybe just nice to look again at the movement of this canto. At the beginning of it, Savitri's back in her hut, in the hermitage, and everything's going on just as before. And nobody notices any change in her. She's in a completely different state. So this reflects Sri Aurobindo's own experience after he had that realization of the silent Brahman, that he could go on giving his political talks and running his newspaper and going on without making any personal effort. It all just went on and nobody noticed anything different. Only sometimes when she was sitting with the sages of the wood, in question and in answer, broke from her high, strange revealings, impossible to men. Something speaks through her, something or someone, secret and remote, took hold of her body for his mystic use. Her mouth was seized to channel ineffable truths, truths that can't be expressed. Knowledge unthinkable found an utterance. So people did notice this. Those sages, they noticed this. No? And Sri Aurobindo explains that this was not formed in Savitri's heart or mind, and it didn't come from the body. The body's voice was simply used. It let the luminous greatness through it pass. But there was a dual power at the poles, at the different extremes of existence, which allow this action to happen. Her divine emptiness is used by these two opposite things. One is the power of inconscient nature. It just goes on dealing with this world that it has made. It uses the instruments of the body just to do whatever needs to be done. No? And in a similar way, the superconscient mystery, the highest consciousness, through that emptiness that Savitri has begun, sends its word, missioned its word, to touch the thoughts of men. So this dual movement was going on in her. And then at the top of page 554, that empty space, this unmoving, wide spiritual space in which her mind survived, completely bare and still and unresponsive, admitted aloud in a traveler from the cosmic breadths. A thought comes, and this thought takes the form of an outer voice. And this voice doesn't speak to the mind, to the heart. It touches directly that power of pure perception that has been her only tool all through the last stages. This pure perception which has allowed her to experience all this. And that is now the only center of her being. And that center of pure perception is widening and widening and widening until it becomes a still and even infinity. Savitri is just waiting to see what will happen. But in her, the infinite, the eternal, the unseen, the unknown is waiting his hour to act. So now she's again sitting by sleeping Satyavan. She's awake within, and she feels all around her the night, this unknowable vastness, and a voice begins to speak from her own heart. It's not her voice, it's an inner voice that speaks and takes control of thought and sense. Sri Aurobindo doesn't tell us what it says, but as it spoke, everything changed in her inner being and around her. There has been that all-negating absolute. No, but now suddenly everything is real, everything exists, everything is alive. She feels the oneness of everything living, no? And this whole sense of unreality vanishes. The world of unreality ceases to be. It's not the universe is no longer seems to be a construction of the perceiving mind. No? That's just a structure or a sign of something else. Instead, she perceives a spirit, a being, observing all created things and casting itself into all these unnumbered forms. A spirit, a being, identifies itself with all the forms in the world. And that spirit was what it saw and made. So now everything, all the apparently unreal forms of the universe, become an evidence of one stupendous truth. A truth in which negation had no place. A being and a living consciousness that is at the same time a stark and absolute reality. So then she has another experience of moving beyond time and space, becoming the infinite, and finding no end to its journey. It plunges into the deep darknesses and found no end to this silent mystery, this being, this spirit that holds the entire world within its single breast and shelters all the multitudes of creation. And she becomes that herself. Her spirit saw the world as living God, and then she is able to identify with him and to identify with all the forms and the beings of the world. This wonderful last passage, where she becomes the subconscious life and then climbing up into mind, thought, heart, soul, identifies with the whole universe, and then she goes beyond. From this she rose, where time and space were not. Infinity was her movement's natural space. Eternity looked out from her on time. So this is the culminating experience that prepares Savitri to face her mission, which is what will happen in the next three books. Shall we stop? We'll hear Mother's reading. Yeah? Nobody has anything to ask.
Only sometimes small thoughts or holes and fill, like quiet waves upon a silent sea, or ripples passing over a lonely pool, when a starry stone disturbs its dreaming rest. Then all grew still, nothing moved anymore. Immobile, self-wrapped, timeless, solitary, a silent spirit pervaded silent space. Unutterably effaced, no one annulled, a vanished vestige, like a violet trace, a faint record, merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable. Not extinct in this deep loss. The being travelled not toward nothingness. There was some high surpassing secrecy, and when she sat alone with Satyavan, her moveless mind with his that searched and stole in the heart of the profound and intimate night. She turned to the face of a veiled, voiceless truth, hid in the dumb recess of the heart, or waiting beyond the last peak climbed my soul. But now she sat by sleeping Satyava, awake within, and the enormous night surrounded her with the unknowable's vast. Out of the infinitudes, all came to her. Into the infinitudes, sentience she spiced. Infinity was her own natural home. Nowhere she dwelt. Her spirit was everywhere. The distant constellations wheeled around her. Earth saw her born. All worlds were her colony. The greater worlds of life and mind were hers. All nature reproduced her in its light. Its movements were large copies of her own. She was the single self of all these selves. She was in them, and they were all in her.
To Shrabindu.